Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. This episode of the Let's Get Busy podcast is sponsored by Gallery Nucleus, a gathering place for the illustration art-loving community that specializes in high-quality prints and art books from some of your favorite children's book illustrators. Christian Robinson will be exhibiting original illustrations from his books Gaston, Josephine, and Leo, A Ghost Story, his latest book, at the gallery September 19th through October 11th. Gallery Nucleus is offering listeners of the Let's Get Busy podcast 15% off your next purchase by entering in the promo code BUSY15 at checkout. That's BUSY15. Visit gallerynucleus.com to browse original artwork and prints and bring your favorite art home. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 188 of the Let's Get Busy podcast with Jarrett Krasoska, returning to the podcast to share It's Tough to Lose Your Balloon, published by Alfred A. Knopf Books for Young Readers. Of course, we also talk about Lunch Lady, and being dads, and the new Comic Squad lunch collection, and the feeling of crippling insecurity. Oh, and we have the podcast's first ever recorded pug snore, which just tells you what good company Jarrett was keeping during our chat. So, sit back, relax, snuggle up with a pug or pug-like object, and enjoy. Here is episode number 188 of the podcast with Jarrett Krasoska. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast. Jarrett Krasoska, welcome back, man.
Hey, thank you, Matthew Winner.
I love the snoring in the background.
he is a tired pup.
Oh, well, so sweet to be joined by your pug and have the nice sound of the sawing of wood while we chat today.
Yeah, it may soon be a duet between Frankie and Ralph. Ralph is his older pug brother, and he's just on the other side of the couch right now.
Well, hey, Jarrett, I was saying to you before we started recording, but congratulations again. Your newest picture book, It's Tough to Lose Your Balloon, marks 30 books with your name on the spine. That's great.
Hey, well, that you have to say Krasoska 30 times fast.
Krasoska 30 times fast. There, that wasn't so
hard. Really? You achieved it once.
So are you kidding? I was raised on dad jokes like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I am now torturing my own child with those sort of jokes, so...
every now and then family members tease me for the dad humor, and I, you know, that's how I make a living now off of bad puns.
There you go. It's not a terrible thing, really.
No.
Well, hey, I should say also, being that you're back here to celebrate this newest book, your newest book, It's Tough to Lose Your Balloon, Jarrett, it's gorgeous. I keep talking about how beautiful the art is on this, that the colors pop so well on this.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah,
why well, don't... No, go ahead. You know, the 30 books aside, you still, like, every you just have crippling insecurity when a book's coming out and you think no one's going to like it. So I appreciate your kind words.
Still you have crippling insecurity?
Totally.
Oh,
every
man.
Moment of the day. No one's going to like it. And you're like, I've just been fooling people all along. For some reason, they're still reading my books.
Share it. That's so sad. Oh, my word.
Well, it's so true, though. I mean, really, it's so true.
Well, I love this book, and I love the snoring. I'm obviously going to talk an awful lot about it, but why don't I first give you a chance to share with the listening audience just what is this book? What is it about?
Sure. It's Tough to Lose Your Balloon. It's a picture book, but it's not necessarily a storybook. I kind of consider it more to be a self-help book for preschool and elementary. And it's a book of just filled with those childhood injustices, which are monumental to a kid, like losing your balloon or dropping your ice cream, or all of this life that just stops everything and the world just stops turning because you're upset things. And at every turn, you find ways to create a solution to look on the bright side. So the opening spread says it's tough to lose your balloon, and you see a boy who's at the park, and it's that very moment where he realizes that the balloon is out of his reach, it's floating away, and you turn the page, and it's a full color spread, and there's an airplane going by, and there's a very happy looking grandmother, and she sees the balloon, and she's sort of touching her heart, and the text reads, "But it'll make grandma smile from the sky." Yeah. And so that part of the book was inspired by something my wife Gina said to our daughter Zoe when she was very little. She lost her balloon at the park. She was crushed. And for me, as a dad and as a creator of picture books for kids, it made me just remember how tragic and how awful that felt to lose your balloon. Plenty of problems today when you think about like work and stress and deadlines and healthcare and taxes and you think like those are the real problems, but man, losing your balloon when you're a kid, that's just the worst that life can hand you at that moment. And Gina, her parents at the time were on a trip, she just said to Zoe that grandma and grandpa, they'll see the balloon from the airplane, they'll know that you sent it, and it calmed Zoe's nerves, and it sort of made me think back to a book that I had written when I was a senior in college that I had sent around and it got rejected a bunch of times. And it was a book of just those life's injustices. So just the bad things. And it was called Peanut Butter and Jelly Sandwiches in the Sand. And, the book, it got rejected by a bunch of people. It fell to the back of my drawer. I forgot about it. But when I saw this interaction between my daughter and her mom, it just made me realize that, you can have a positive twist to these awful things. And this book that, started writing in 1999, sort of had breathed new life into it. And that's where It's Tough to Lose Your Balloon came from.
I this taps into a lot of things for me too, as well, having a 5-year-old myself and going through those moments where the world is sort of falling apart for this kid over what we feel is just nothing.
That's just it.
But like you're saying, it's everything. It is absolutely everything to him. And I would even go one step further and to say, if I were to deny that emotion for him and say, get over it, it's just a balloon, or get over it, it's just whatever, I'm missing an opportunity to connect with him and to see things from his perspective and show him that I really do care. So you've got...
And he needs to feel validated, and he
absolutely
needs to know that it's okay to mourn the loss of the balloon.
One of the spreads you have in here is one that he's gone through a couple times, and I have, in a couple times, almost word for word, given him the same solution that you offer up, which is a beautiful thing, because now it is okay for him. And that is halfway through the book, we see a girl at the playground, there's a puddle, and it says, "It's the worst to have wet shoes." And when you turn the page, "But it's the best to go barefoot." And that spread for me, man, that's such a thing to be, to know soggy feet, feel like for adults sometimes that means my entire day has gone down the drain. But
to have to be standing in wet socks, that's the worst.
It is. It is the worst.
But to be able to go barefoot, it's the best.
I love in the way that you illustrated this too. And I should ask, is it all watercolor or did you do anything digitally?
It is. It's black line drawings. What I would do is, you know, I'm used to with, you know, the Lunch Lady books and the Platypus Police Squad books, you know, as the cartoonist, I'm using that non-photo blue pencil and I'm creating all of the understructure so that when I go to ink, I just know exactly where to put everything.
Yeah.
And I wanted the line work to feel very free. So I, instead of using a brush, I use a pen and I would just like, it felt like, you know, going on a high wire without a net, I would just ink the drawing. And if it was too tight, I would just draw it again. And if I didn't like that, I would just draw it again and again and again until it felt just sort of free and not worried about like all the sort of understructure of the sketch. Everything out, and I would scan in that line drawing, and then I would create blocks of watercolor separately, and then that was combined in Photoshop. So I wanted it to look like it was made by hand. I didn't want it to look digital, and then in Photoshop, then there were areas where I thought, oh, okay, I can the color define the shape, and I would erase out some of the line work.
Well, it's got that great, I bring that up because it does have, you've maintained through Photoshop the texture of the brush stroke, which is something that I think would be hard to recreate, or painstaking perhaps even to recreate, in the way that there's just these sort of happy accidents that happen when you paint with a brush, right?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And just even with watercolor, the way the line is defined and the way that the color seeps into the paper.
Yeah. Well, I really liked, in particular, too, you talk about that loose line. And I like the way that it feels, and I mean this as a compliment, but it feels like the pages where you're setting up the problem feels to me like a drawing like you would do in front of children at a school visit. It feels like, I need to draw this for the child right now. I need you to see that I know what it's like to be in this experience. I know what it's like to lose a balloon. I know what it's like to drop a sandwich. I know what that's like. Let me draw it for you to show that I've been there. I can visualize that. And then to turn the page and to see it. I mean, in those illustrations, you just have the child or the child and the associated problem, like the balloon or the sandwich. That's the only color that you see on that page. And then when you turn it to see, as you were saying, that full color spread, there is some sort of like a transformation, much like, I mean, I bring this right back because I've seen you present to children before, and there is that magic of seeing it come to life on the page, and to have, there's that moment where kids recognize what you're drawing, and there's an excitement there to know that, like, oh, I know that, we have a connection here. So I don't know how much of that was intentional or not, but I just wanted to convey to you that the way that came across to me felt very special and felt very much like these illustrations feel like here is an artist that's on your side and that really has walked this path before and isn't just saying, hey, kid, sometimes this junk happens to you. It'll be okay. But rather, it sounds like you're talking to your own child in this book. And it's sweet.
I appreciate that, Matthew. Man, I you know, very much recognize a lot of the body gestures that the characters have. In my own kids, and it wasn't until I got the proofs back for the, you know, the first round of proofs for the book, and I was really taking a critical look at the illustrations after not seeing them for a while, that I just innately put a lot of my children's own body language into the characters. So in a way, you know, I definitely as a dad of young kids, just know how you really have to navigate, you know, these small moments that happen around every turn for these kids that could just be, you know, awful from their perspective.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably the thing also that comes from having done this for 14, 15, however many years you've been creating books for children, that now, I mean, and many artists I think go through this, but you've gone from not having kids to now knowing children intimately in the way that you've raised them. So I guess I see it as there's just an intimacy here that I just can't deny, that you go from writing for all children to what feels like writing for your girls, and then all of us just getting to enjoy because there's this universal appeal to it.
I think that might be it. I mean, it's funny. So my very first picture book, it was Goodnight Monkey Boy. And I wrote the book when I was 21, right? And it was published when I was 23. So 21 years old, I'm writing this book about a kid going to bed. And now I look at that book and the mother's, you know, putting Monkey Boy to bed. And the clock says 9 o'clock. And I'm thinking, just started that process at 9 p.m.? You know? And another one of my early picture books, it was called Bubble Bath Pirates. And I was 23 when I wrote the book. And, you know, the mother, she gets them to the bath. And after the bath, she suggests they have ice cream in the kitchen. And I think that is so backwards. Like, no, you should have had ice cream before you get into the bath. As a dad, I know that now. But as, you know, a 23-year-old who also was, you know, looking to craft a story, and it was a punchline at the end that the kids would run off without their towels to get chocolate ice cream. But, I think fatherhood is definitely, you know, influenced my work and changed my work. I can tell you the name of my next picture book, which I think should be out probably, I believe, fall 2016, but it's called Naptastrophe, about, it's told from the child's perspective about, you know, thinking about what you're going to miss out when you don't take a nap, but then how that affects the rest of your day when you just absolutely lose it because you're so tired.
We've entered that new realm of so Jonah is now going to kindergarten. He just started kindergarten.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. It's been crazy. But talk about naps, and he stopped taking naps, I don't know, about a year ago. But now that he's going to school full time, he comes home and 8 o'clock, he doesn't realize, look, buddy, not only is 8 o'clock too late for you to be going to bed, but you have burned all of your energy the entire day long, and now, like, you are turning into a monster.
You're turning into a monster, and I'm sure he fully denies being tired.
Oh, yeah. No,
there are times when our daughter Lucy, who's three, will just out of the blue just look at me and say, I'm not tired, and I didn't ask you if you were tired.
Yeah, we're in a new place now where before he could kind of tell, like, buddy, do you just need to go to bed? Is tonight just like a one storybook night? To now he's just like, I'm not tired. I'm getting my own jammies. I'm doing whatever. Like, boy, you are 5 years old telling me what to do. This is a wonderful new life. But it is, I should say, just tonight, like, or this week, we're in a place now where he's starting to request books for read alouds at night. And that I've gone my entire adult, you know, parenthood life with him never requesting a book, and it sort of killed me a little bit inside that I'm a librarian, you should like books. And it's not that he doesn't like them, but now he's starting to, like, want to go to bed with stuff, which makes me feel really good, because then it also means that we can really start talking about, hey, remember when you had soggy feet? That was totally okay. And we actually were talking about a number of the different things that have happened, and now he tells me, so maybe this is your another forthcoming picture book that you can take inspiration from my boy's childhood. But now, not only is it that we can have these sort of conversations like you have, that, hey, if this happens, it's okay, because this good thing can happen. But now he also tells me, like, when he tracks mud into the house or when he spills his food or whatever, he looks at me and says, it's okay, Daddy, accidents happen.
That's great.
Oh, you are trying to ground me, son. This is wonderful. Accidents
That's
happen,
awesome.
Daddy. So,
that's
I don't
awesome.
Know. Yeah, it's
smart
it,
kid.
It's been, well, there you go. It's been a good life. I can't wait to hear the way that, because this always happens, right? You read this book to children, and I've read it now on Monday and Tuesday to my kids this week at school, and it's fun to be able to ask them. So, what are the things that happen to you that feel like a big deal, that feel like a problem? And have you ever been able to turn it around? And the biggest problems always, and these are big, really, really big problems, but the biggest problems are like, Mom forgot to pack my gummies in lunch or things like that. Like, man, you are right. That is a huge problem. Or God forbid, we were sitting at story time on the reading rug and so-and-so farted. Like, that is, you're right, life is tough.
That is probably the author's biggest enemy when it comes to school presentations. If one kid lets out an audible tune, kids in the immediate vicinity are just, they lose it. I lose it. I have to keep a straight face because then also I don't want, you know, the kid who passed gas to say, oh, now the author's laughing at me too. But yeah. It's like a set of dominoes.
But it also goes nicely with this book that if this happens, it's okay. We can all laugh it off. It's totally okay. Okay, so it's Tough to Lose Your Balloon is coming out very soon. Wonderful. I can't wait for this book to come out, and I can't wait for it to connect with kids. And, oh, I also saw that you're coming to the National Book Festival, right?
I will be there.
Yay!
I will be. I'm very excited.
Have you been before?
I've been a couple times. It's been a couple years since I've been down for it. I haven't been since it moved to the convention center, but I hear that was a great move, and it seems like it really benefited the experience for
last
folks.
Year it was nice. It was, you definitely felt a little bit, I mean, whereas when it was on the lawn or on the mall and you would go like outside of the tents if you didn't have room, this was a little bit more like when I go to a library conference and like people are spilling out of the room to just peek in. But I thought the convention center was really nice and it worked out really well. So it's great that you're coming back.
I can't wait. It's an incredible roster too. I was looking down
my
the
word.
Schedule.
Yeah.
Kate DiCamillo, Buzz Aldrin, and Dan Santad, and Jenny Holm, and it's going to be John Chesky. It's going to be a great group. And you know, they have a private party for all of us at the Library of Congress the night before. So
oh, cool.
Yeah.
And you've done a bunch of stuff in the Library of Congress too. You've worked with them a bunch, right?
I have. I'd see. I was there for a symposium on the Reluctant Reader, and I was there to talk to the Young Reader Center about Lunch Lady. I'll be there again later this fall for an event with Platypus Police Squad and the reading program with police officers. So it's an incredible organization, and I feel incredibly lucky to even, you know, make it past their security, never mind get invited in to actually participate in their programs.
How does the book festival work as far as like, there must be a panel of people at Library of Congress that are like selecting who to come out, right? Or does it work through publishers or whatever, however it does?
I think that's the case, yeah.
Whatever it is, it doesn't even matter. Whatever it is, it's year after year, it's always incredible. But this year, and this might be just coincidence, I noticed, or it felt like it's an awful lot of people from Comic Squad, which felt amazing.
I think there's eventually going to be so many of us that all of the festivals will end up becoming Comic Squad.
That's true. There are, because there is, I know that, when does Comic Squad Lunch comes out in January, right?
It comes out the very end of January, the last Tuesday of January. Did you get a hold of a copy yet?
No, I didn't. I didn't even know that arcs were sent out yet. But I loved, as you know, I was a big, big fan of Recess. I thought that not only the people that you and Jenny and Matt assembled to be in this great anthology was awesome, and the original stories were fantastic. But I actually personally loved being able to do... when we connected for World Read Aloud Day with schools across the country, we were taking stories from Comic Squad Recess and performing them as readers' theater with schools across the country. It was amazing.
Oh, that's great. I didn't realize that. Yeah. I just love the idea of it just the Comic Squad serving as a rabbit hole for comics reading. So, you know, if someone came for one author and they finished Comic Squad and they came, you know, had a couple of authors that they didn't know about, and they would go then find some books by those creators. And that definitely seems like that was the case for, you know, especially for maybe say the parent who doesn't know everything about, you know, who's out there making comics, like folks like yourself would. It just acts like a great portal and Comic Squad Lunch, man. Wait till you see this book. It's got Snoopy. I mean, I can't believe it has Snoopy, let alone everybody
it
else
does?
That has in it. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. I'll have to get you an arc. So Jenny Holm and Matt Holm did an event with the Schultz Museum last year. And so Charles Schultz Creative Associates still create, Snoopy and Charlie Brown comics based on stories that were written by Charles Schultz, and they have, you know, the Boom Studios weekly or monthly comic that comes out, and they they created a little short piece around the theme of lunch. And then I was out in San Francisco a couple weeks ago, and I had 5 hours before my flight was going to take off. And it's an hour and a half from San Francisco to Santa Rosa, where the Charles Schulz Museum is. And I contacted the people at the museum and the people that you know work for the creative studio. And I said, I'm coming. Like I'll only be able to stay like 40 minutes.
You are making this tight, yeah.
I drove up there. I got a supermarket sweep, you know, tour of the museum, and then they gave me a tour of the studios, and I got to see where Charles Schulz worked. I was taking a photo of his desk and his chair, and they said, "Well, do you want to sit there? We'll take a picture of you sitting in the chair." Unbelievable. I'm hoping to go back next year, you know, after Comic Squad Lunch comes out, to spend more time there. But man, that was just an amazing experience. But yeah, and CC Bell has a great piece. So the way it works is,
great.
You know, Matt, Jenny, and I—we each take two cartoonists, and you know, we read everyone's stuff, but we have two artists that are the two artists that we're on top of and we're communicating with, and I got to work with CC Bell on her piece, and Jason Chiega, you know, who did Meanwhile, did this crazy, yes, amazing choose your own adventure style comic for this.
For this? Oh man!
Yeah, Lunch is a great companion for recess, and when you put the two books together, it's going to be incredible. And it's the interior color is Charlie Brown yellow, so like the exact color of Charlie Brown's shirt, that Pantone color is.
I should say too, for people listening, if you haven't read Comic Squad Recess, that the idea here is that we have all these different comics creators creating original comics, all based around a common theme, but can be any variant on that theme. So in Recess, we had Dave and Raina made a great one of my favorite stories that I've even seen in comics about a kickball tournament indoor recess style, like through like D&D. It was amazing. And Dan Santad had that great trying to write a book report over recess, and you had an original Baby Mouse comic, an original Lunch Lady comic, and it all was around that theme. So lunch is that same way. Everything is around that theme of lunch.
Yeah, and here, I'll very quickly, I'm taking a look at the arc now, so I make sure I get everyone here. So we have Jason Chiega, we have Cecil Castellucci and Sarah Varon made a piece. From Jedi Academy did a piece, CC Bell. Nathan Hale did A Hazardous Tale, a nonfiction piece for lunch. It's quite the collection.
And you said Jeffrey Brown of the Star Wars, that's or Jedi Academy?
Yeah, he did. He has a new comic series coming out with Random House, and he did a little short that will sort of introduce those characters.
Yeah, and Sarah Varon. Man, this is great. And I like that you're using these new people coming on too. Do you also, though, contribute another Lunch Lady thing? Do Matt and Jenny contribute? Sunny Side Up thing or a Baby Mouse? How do they approach it?
They did a Baby Mouse piece, and nice. I did an origin story for Lunch Lady.
Oh, cool.
So it's Lunch Lady as a kid. So Matt and Jenny will always create a short little piece, and I'll always create a short little piece, and we get everyone's work in, and we see how many odd pages we have left, and then Jenny, Matt, and I create little interstitials that sort of feel like those old school ads you would see in comic books, or a little, you know, fun little, like fun pages, basically, for lack of a better way of calling them. They're fun pages.
I assume that you're reaching out into just your friends to make this book, to assemble this book. You're just inviting friends to write with you, right?
No, I mean, I didn't know Jason Chiega before.
That's what I was going to ask. Are there people? Yes.
No, we're choosing people that, you know, we think are some of the, you know, the stars of comic. Basically, like here's the thought is, you know, how much would a kid freak out if they saw all of these names together? That's exactly. Kind of what goes into that.
That's cool that then you get to be a fan too.
We get to be a fan too, yeah. I mean, I have not met Jeffrey Brown in person, but I've been a fan of his work for many years, and so we connected through this, and
Sarah Varon. I'm excited about Sarah Varon. I didn't realize she was on your group too. That's cool.
Yeah, they put together a really cool piece.
Wow. Do you have – I might have asked this last time I talked to you, but did you all with the publisher sign like a multi-book deal, or is it just sort of one book at a time? Do you know how long this potentially will go, or I know it could go forever, but...
I mean, we'd love for it to go on and on and on. There's a third book that's under contract. And,
okay, so the first one was successful enough, obviously, then. I can say it that way, right?
Yeah, yeah. The first one was a one book, and then we had lunch in the third book. And I'm sure after lunch comes out, Matt, Jenny, and I will get on Twitter and pretend like we're coming up with it in real time and tease people with the cover reveal or something like that.
Cool. Well, that's good. Good to know that at least there's a third. I can't imagine it not reaching more and more and more people and it becoming sort of a thing. I feel like that it's such a staple in our library that to have a book like that, much like the way Kazoo's anthologies work too, that you read those, you fall in love with the different art, and then you come to the librarian and say, okay, I like this short story by this person. Do you have anything by them? The way that it can work like that. I mean, I think about more and more kids finding Jason Shiga's Meanwhile or finding Sarah Varian's I don't know, Sweater Weather or whatever else. It's Odd Duck. My word. Yeah. Bake sales. So good. That's great. Yeah, that's great, man. That's exciting. Are you working on beyond that any other comics? I know Lunch Lady is wrapped up. Is that another plate you're thinking about spinning? Cause you've got your picture books and you've got Platypus Squad still going strong. I know you sort of constantly are working on different things as an author, and I like that you are able to reach such a wide audience. So I didn't know if you plan to come back to comics more.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm working on Platypus Police Squad 4, which is called it's called Never Say Narwhal, and it's coming out in May of 16. And that'll actually be the last Platypus Police Squad. So that those four books will have a story arc that, you know, begins and gets complete at the end of the fourth book. Okay. And I have other graphic novel, I guess, series, graphic novel-esque series that are in the work. So, you know, for me, I love to tell stories with words and pictures, and you know, with Comic Squad, it's a great way for me to keep, you know, to revisit Lunch Lady, because I'll always make a Lunch Lady short for these Comic Squad pieces. And, you know, I'm not completely shutting the door to coming back to Lunch Lady someday either. But I have these other, you know, these other ideas that have been gestating and growing in my head that, you know, pretty soon I'll be able to not dance around talking about it as much.
Of course.
Yeah.
No, needless to say, though, you will still be creating comics. I mean, I look at it as from a librarian standpoint. You are literally all around our library because our picture books are placed in one section of our library, and our graphic novels, we have a graphic novel section, and we have a fiction section. So kids sometimes go around and get your stuff from all around the library in one visit, or there's other kids that know you for picture books and then get to find out about graphic novels or whatever in whatever different category. So it's great to know that you sort of continue to spin those plates and make something for everyone that way. And more importantly, just that you like telling stories through the medium that works best, whether that's in long form in a middle grade chapter book or visually through a graphic novel or in a picture book in sort of this nice, tight, beautiful work of art format that picture books are.
Oh, thank you, man. You know, I now that I've had books up for a little while now, I get to meet the kids and the families who come to book events where, say, it's a, you know, the oldest kid is 13 and they started reading the picture books, and it's to be welcomed into a young reader's life in such a way is such a privilege and an honor to be able to be with them at any step, let alone, you know, a couple of steps along the way, be it at, you know, story time when the parents reading aloud or independent reading when they're getting older. Because now, you know, in our house here, you know, my daughter's going to be she is in first grade now, I should say. She's reading independently. And it's weird because she's now reading stories that I haven't read yet, and it's completely changed our family dynamics, because you've got a kid now who's sitting quietly and chill, and you're thinking like, what? I don't understand. Like, I don't have to run around and entertain them. But then she's, you know, there are characters that are being welcomed into her imagination. And I, as somebody who's creating these characters, I you know, I know it really is a privileged and hallowed space.
You have been sent all around the country and the world with different author visits and different book events and all that. And I was thinking, before we got on to chat about your TED Talks. Last time you were on, I was talking about your TED Talk because I loved it. I thought it was great, talking about School Lunch Hero Day. But then it occurred to me coming in to talk to you tonight that you're probably reaching, again, a completely different audience in the way that you're advocating for children's literature by being in front of, again, this different audience that now you get to bring back and talk about children's literature. I just thought that was a neat thing, that I wonder if you've had this experience of not that one side where you have a school visit and so the kids are saying, "Mom, can you buy this book for me? This guy was really cool." But on perhaps the other side where the parent is saying, "Oh, this guy was really inspiring in this talk. Maybe I can check out his books to read to my kid," and have it work sort of backwards that way.
Yeah, it does. It definitely happens that way. And the weird thing that I guess I've been reflecting on is that first TED Talk I gave was, oh my gosh, I don't know, was it 4 years ago or five years ago?
A little while ago, yeah.
It was a very personal. It's this weird, like, oh, that's, there will forever be like the 33-year-old version of myself giving that talk, you know, because people still will share it or tweet at me or send me messages where they make connections with their own lives or their children's lives. And it's this weird digital version of me that's just constantly giving that talk out there. I was recognized at a Dunkin' Donuts or soon after that first TED Talk, and it suddenly realized how bizarre that was, that person had sat and listened to me for 15 minutes, but I'd never met them before.
Yeah. But when you connect with someone that intimately, like when you're sharing, as you did in that story, that intimate part of your childhood, people, I would imagine, feel like they have an automatic connection with you. And that would be weird on the other side of it to go, I don't know you.
But you know a lot about me. Yeah, exactly.
You know a lot about me. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now tell me about your family while we eat our donuts.
Yeah, and that's the responsibility that I hadn't anticipated is, the people connecting their stories to it as well, or, you know, giving people hope if they had addiction somewhere in their family's lives. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, you know, so many people that work in school cafeterias who maybe feel more validated or whose administrators, you know, it put together some kind of celebration to recognize their hard work. It's pretty crazy to think that can be achieved by giving a talk that's shared so widely because of the recognition of what is TED.com.
Right. Just to have that platform to share and then to be as well on social media, the way that things just get, it's in that way that things sort of never die. They can date, but the message is still there and still is something that we can continue to push for. I mean, that, I know you've heard many, many people say this, but, and for me to say it again, that School Lunch Hero Day, that's something that should have existed forever ago. And I'm so glad that you were the one to start it and to help, because you've got this platform to help keep it going and to help cheer on those men and women that work so hard to provide meals for our children. And it stems from there and goes to everyone who provides for our children and is able to be that sort of support for them.
Yeah. And, you know, and definitely School Lunch Hero Day, because of passionate educators, because kids recognize the lunch lady character, but it took off because people wanted to celebrate the folks in their school cafeteria that are working so hard. Like, you know, everybody has such a great place in their heart for the people who are feeding our kids and wanting to make sure they knew that they were loved and appreciated.
Well, Jarrett, I've got to say before we wrap up this conversation, before I talk to you about kickball, I have to say that it's very clear to me in the sort of, I guess, years now that I've known you, that you really deeply care about people. And that matters to me a lot. And I know it matters to a lot of people, but you see it come through your comics and come through the stories you share. And I see it so clearly, and it's tough to lose your balloon. It means a lot to me that you care so much about people and that you are in front of thousands of children every year sharing this message so that they too can know that this is a good quality to have, to want to grow up to be like a person like you that cares about other people and is working selflessly and tirelessly to keep applauding, raising up, supporting those people that matter in our world.
I'm speechless because, you know, Matthew, you and so many of your colleagues that I talk to on a regular basis on Twitter and Facebook, I mean, you guys are doing so many amazing, wonderful things for your kids. So I will simply hold up a mirror to the Skype chat right back at you, sir.
You're very sweet. Well, I'm excited because I know that this is a book that I get to keep talking to you about more and more, and that's wonderful. But why don't I also return with you to the kickball field to see if things have changed, if you've thought about new people. I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit Dream Team kickball tournament, perhaps right outside of the convention center in D.C. in a couple weeks. And I would love to know, Jarrett, what one person alive or past from the kid-lit world you would want on your team and why.
Well, I think last time I said something about kicking the kickball into Dan Santat's face, if I remember correctly.
True?
I think so.
It started quite, yeah.
But, you know, now he's won the Caldecott medal, and they'd be like, what a jerk. He won the Caldecott medal. Why would you do that to Dan Santat? So I will choose instead to take the kickball to the face for my buddy Dan Santat.
A reverse kickball.
No. Yeah, I would say last time I said something about kicking the kickball right to Dan Santat's face, and that was just, that just wasn't nice. So I will now instead have Dan Santat as my teammate, and then if someone was going to kick a ball in his face, I will just in slow motion jump in the way and full on marsha get the kickball right into my nose.
Well, if the game ever happens, I hope that
I hope
we're able to have that amazing moment and wear mouth guards. That's true. Jarrett, it always is a pleasure to talk to you. And it's awesome to hear the work behind the work that you're doing and know how clearly your heart is in it. That matters a lot to me. I know it matters a lot to other people. And I can't wait to see just how you continue to connect with children and with readers of all ages, including us grown-up readers. Thank you for everything you do.
I thank you, and thank you for taking the time to chat with me, Matt.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by Matthew Winner in his library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. Theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.